I'm Amber Harper from the Burned In Teacher Podcast and a part of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to now. Shows on the network are individually owned and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
You know, you can tell people to take risks all day long, but until they see A, you taking risks, and B, you celebrating the risk-taking of others even when it didn't work, they're not going to trust you that risk-taking is okay.
Welcome to the Leader of Learning podcast. This is where educators can come to find inspiration to transform education through effective leadership. I'm your host, Dr. Dan Krynas, and my research and leadership experiences have led me to understand that someone like you, regardless of your role or your title, can truly make an impact in your organization. I chat with amazing guests who epitomize what it truly means to be a leader of learning. I'm so glad you've tuned in. Let's get started. Welcome to episode 127 of the Leader of Learning podcast. I don't do this often enough, but I do want to ask that if you're new to the show, or maybe you've listened to several episodes or even every episode of the Leader of Learning podcast, but you're not yet subscribed on your favorite way to listen, whether that's Apple Podcasts or Spotify or some kind of podcast app, please go ahead and subscribe. And I also hope you wouldn't mind taking just a couple of minutes and leaving a positive rating or review on whatever podcast app you use. I'd like to ask one more thing. I've put a lot of time and effort into building my YouTube channel over the past several months, and especially lately as I've posted a couple of tutorial videos as well as full-length episodes and also highlight videos of the interviews that I do for this podcast. I hope you'll consider heading to YouTube, looking up my channel, Dr. Dan Krynas, or if you search for Leader of Learning, you'll find it that way too. And please also consider subscribing on YouTube. Now, getting into episode 127, again, I'm releasing episodes every week in the month of January as we have kicked off 2022. I know it's been very tough for educators, but I took a little bit of time off from the podcast, and this is my way of giving back. And this is going to be an amazing episode because I finally have connected with and gotten onto the podcast the amazing leader and influencer, Todd Nesloney. You probably know Todd if you're a connected educator. He is an educator, a former principal. He is a speaker and an author. Todd has authored or co-authored several books, beginning with Kids Deserve It, Stories from the Web, Sparks in the Dark, his most recent professional book, When Kids Lead, and also a children's book called Spruce and Lucy. I had an amazing time talking to Todd, and I know you're going to get a lot of value out of this episode. So we're going to get right into it. After these messages is my interview with Todd Nesloney. Welcome back, Leader of Learning. As always, I have another amazing educational leader and a very interesting and inspiring guest. Todd Nesloney, Tech Ninja Todd, joins me. You probably know him. He's a popular connected educator, an author, a speaker. He does it all. Podcaster, fellow podcaster as well. So I'm excited to talk to you, Todd. I've been sort of secretly wanting to get you on the show for a while. I'm really glad we were able to make it happen here as we get started in 2022 and kick the year off. So thanks for coming on. And of course, whatever I didn't hit in your introduction, if you could fill in for us, you know, who you are, where you are, and what you do.
Yeah, so thank you so much for having me, Dan. I'm so excited to get to have this conversation with you tonight. But like you said, you know, I've been a teacher, a principal. I'm now the Director of Culture and Strategic Leadership for the Texas Elementary Principal Association. I've got 2 6-month-old twin boys. I'm married to a beautiful woman named Liz, live in a small town in Texas. I have a couple books out. I do my own podcast called Honestly, Let's Talk. Kind of got my hand in a little bit of everything, it feels like.
That's awesome. Keeps you busy. Here's where I want to start, because you touched on it at least a little bit in your intro there. How is fatherhood going? And I'm especially curious because not a lot of people know this. I myself am a twin. I grew up I have a twin brother, and I'm curious how it is raising twin boys. I know it's only been 6 months so far, but how's that going?
Well, you know, it's just like they say, nothing you can prepare for. I think what has been the most interesting thing for me and my wife, though, is how even though our boys are twins, and even though they were born in the same human body, they have literally nothing in common. I mean, they don't even use the same type of bottles or the same type of formula. Like, they are two polar opposite children. One is fully wild, full of energy 24 hours a day. The other one is super chill, laid back like an old grandpa. So it's been amazing and wonderful, but every day you learn and experience something new. So I learned that I had nowhere near as much preparedness as I thought I
mean, did. I think that's the same with any new parent, but I'm sure having two at the same time and doing everything at once is not easy. I got to be honest, growing up, my mom always said that it was probably, you know, I only have me and my brother, no older siblings or younger. My mom always said it was easier probably than having different ages because we did everything at the same time. So I don't really know what else to compare it to. I mean, I have two kids of different ages, but they're 3.5 years apart. So it's really not the same. I think for you, and I'm not sure I can give you parenting advice, but I think as a twin, it kind of qualifies me to give you a little bit of advice. Like, I guess my advice to you would be because you've realized so early on that both kids are really different, like to continue to recognize them for their differences. I think my parents were pretty good at that. We weren't those kind of twins. We're not identical, first of all, but we weren't really those kind of twins who were like dressed the same. After kindergarten, we never ever had the same classes. You know, we were different academically, athletically. We have very different interests and abilities, but yet, you know, we've always been pretty close. We only live about 15 minutes away from each other still now. It's kind of cool being a twin. So hopefully your guys will be cool with it growing up too.
I love that. I definitely hope for the same thing.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And as much as possible, try not to dress them the same.
I know. We've already said the same thing. And it's funny because we never dress them the same except for like their Santa photos and like the fall photo shoot. I'm like, God, everybody sees these professionally done photos and they're gonna think, oh, they always dress in the same. We're like, no, we want them to be their individual personalities. They just worked for the photo. Yeah,
that's like teacher Twitter, right? Sometimes you only see like the real positive stuff and you don't see everything else.
Yep.
Yeah, I feel like now is probably okay to dress them alike, especially for those occasions and those formal photos and things. But definitely didn't like that. Even looking back at old photos, we were like, oh man, why did you really have to dress us the same way? I don't think my parents did it often either, but I do remember there was some kind of like Navy sailor suit involved in one of those times that they dressed us alike. And it has like pretty much scarred me for life. Anyway, you know, let's talk teaching and learning and leading. And first and foremost, I hate to really harp on this because we could talk about it forever and do it in every single episode. But I did just want to ask, you know, how are things for you right now? Sometimes I feel like Texas is its own its own entity, really, when it comes to some COVID-related things. But in terms of, you know, education and how schools are running and you and your day-to-day work, you know, what's going on these days in terms of schools and school leadership?
You know, you hit the nail on the head when you said Texas is like its own country, because not only for the fact that things are so different around here, but it's different from where you are in the state. And so I may live in this part of the state and everybody's masked up, everybody's taking it seriously. But in another part of the state, they're like, nope, never existed. We never had a day off. We never went virtual. And it's so interesting to live in this world of education where so many of us have had things in common for so long, but then you throw something like a pandemic in when you're in the South where I am, it's everybody treats it differently. And so it's so hard to all get aligned and everything. But I would say me personally, my day-to-day job activities have been minimally affected, but I spend a lot of time working with educators in Texas and especially school administrators as part of my job with TEPSA. And just to see the unbearable loads that have been placed on all in education, teachers, administrators, central office alike. It's just to watch how unsustainable this is and to watch a career that I love so much and I know so many love, but to see so many people leaving it, it's just heartbreaking. And just to see the fear of what the future will look like for this job and these kids we serve is, to me, it's unnerving, but it has me even more committed to being as much of a support as I can for others, just to help people however I can.
Yeah, no, it's definitely been tough for everyone. Now, in terms of your day-to-day work, when it comes to supporting schools and supporting leaders, what is your role? What do you do in terms of working with the school leaders and the principals?
Yeah, so like I said, I work for the Texas Elementary Principal and Supervisor Association. And so my job is a lot of virtual. I was doing some in-person stuff before COVID hit. I was visiting schools, amplifying the work they were doing through our social media, attending some region meetings and speaking at them and helping inspire school leaders. Right now, a lot of my job is organizing a lot of virtual content and making sure that there's good bite-sized things to help administrators keep pushing ahead, keeping their teachers' needs at the forefront of their minds, the students' needs at the forefront of their minds, giving them ideas on how to balance things. Those who have served in a school leadership capacity know that you're spinning 20 plates at all times. And anytime anybody can come in and just give you one little idea, one little reminder of something you may have heard before but forgot in the flood of information you're constantly being overrun with, is helpful. And so a lot of my job right now is just connecting with leaders and giving them different tools and resources and just providing a wealth of materials online they can access at any time they want.
I thought of a couple of questions to ask you as you were mentioning that, but I think the first question I have will kind of ask you to go back several years, because what I do know about you and your story is that after a relatively short amount of time as a classroom teacher, you made the, I won't even call it a transition, like a pretty big leap, right, from classroom teacher to principal.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering how that leap went for you, but also in terms of, because I do have a lot of listeners who are teacher leaders and aspiring leaders, and, you know, maybe what to expect from making a move outside of the classroom. Because despite the fact that what you just said is real, and I've lived it as well, where school leaders and administrators have, if it's 20 plates spinning at the same time during COVID, it's been more like 30, 40, 50, or 500. I don't even know. But maybe they are. They're thinking that they're ready for that. What was your experience, and what kind of advice would you give to them?
You know, I spent 7 years as a classroom teacher, and I got my master's right away just because our school district had done a partnership with a university that you could get a discounted rate if you got your master's. And so everybody on my grade level team was doing it. So I was like, hey, I want to be the first person in my family with a master's. So I went and got a master's in school administration, never planning to use it. I swore I would never be a school administrator. It was kind of those reminders of my family always says, you know, when you tell God no, he's going to make it happen. And so I was in my classroom one day teaching, feeling like I was on the top of the world with what I was doing. And I got a Twitter direct message from a district up the road that saw a lot of the work I was putting out and offered me to come in for an interview. They had a position for a principalship that was going to be a school that was starting over with a lot of issues that had been in place. And I turned down. I said, no, I'm not interested at all. I said, I only got a master's to have a master's. Like, I didn't really want to be a principal yet. But they kept pursuing me over a month or two and finally got me to come in to have a conversation with them. And I just fell in love with their beliefs about what was possible with education. And so I took the leap straight from classroom teacher to school principal, which I will not recommend for everybody. It was a very interesting journey. I got to hire my entire staff from the custodians all the way up. So that was fun too. I liken it to a rose bush. It was a beautiful experience, but there were a lot of thorns involved and a lot of learning and scars and everything else from that first year. But I think the biggest thing I took away, and one thing I talk about with educators often now, is we always think we know what everybody else on campus is doing. even though we haven't always walked in their shoes. You know, my career path as an educator is when I was in high school, I was in an educator prep program in high school. We were one of only two schools in the state of Texas that offered it. And I went and worked at an elementary 3 days a week as a high school student for a couple hours a day. And then when I was in college, I worked as an instructional aide. And so it's kind of one of those things as an instructional aide, while I'm going to college to be a teacher, I was like, psh, I know what these teachers do. I'm so ready for this. And then I graduate college and have my first classroom and I'm like, what the heck? I didn't know this was due. I didn't know we had to do this. I didn't know this was coming up. And so then as you become a teacher, you're like, I know what that principal does all day. I know what those assistant principals do all day. And then I became a principal. And one of the first things I went and did was I found my previous principal. And I said, I just have to tell you, I'm sorry. I thought I knew what you did, but I had no idea. And then as I began to work with central office staff, I realized I didn't know all what they did. And so it's kind of one of those things of we think we know what these people do in these roles, but until you walk in their shoes, you don't. And that was one of the biggest learning things for me. And the second thing was I thought I was like every other educator. I didn't think there was anything special about me. I didn't think I was doing anything differently. I thought I was just normal. Until I became a principal and realized there are teachers all over the spectrum. There are people who need a lot of support. There are people who need reassurance every single day that they're doing a good job. There are people who are like, leave me alone, I've got this, and they really do. And there are people who say, leave me alone, I've got this, and they don't, and you have to check in on them. And so when I realized just how my teachers at my school were just like my students in my classroom, I don't know why I thought every teacher was the same, but that was such an eye-opener for me to realize, no, they're all different, just like your students. They all have different needs, just like your students. So that was another lesson that I had to learn the hard way.
Yeah, that it is interesting, you know, and there's always that joke about like how teachers make the worst students, right? But it's a great analogy and so spot on when you say making that move from teacher to administrator, you're like, oh. The teachers now that I'm supporting as staff members are so much like my students because they're, yep. You know, you really hit the nail on the head there.
Well, you know, and as an elementary person, I always tell people, I'm like, when they're like, well, what did you miss the classroom when you became an administrator? And I hate that question so much because that is such an antiquated view of what a classroom is. It's like, my classroom changed, but it's still my classroom. But anyway, I always tell them my students are no different now as adults than when I was doing elementary teaching. Only thing that's different is the adult elementary teachers cry way more than my elementary students ever did. Literally the only difference between
the two. That's funny. You alluded to that principal position being really like a turnaround type of a position, like a transformation where the school really needed help and basically rebuilt from the ground up in terms of you hiring or building from scratch a whole staff of people. I sent a survey to my listeners not too long ago, and one of the pieces of feedback I got back that really stuck out to me was when I asked, what kind of content do you want to hear more about on the podcast? And I think I cover this a lot anyway, but the comment about change leadership. And so I tackle that in almost every single episode. And what I love about it is that, you know, no guest ever really has the same ideals and philosophies. But it's also because I talk to people in such different positions and with such different experiences. You know, when you got into that position and ever since, what have been some of your thoughts around turning things around and that kind of change leadership and what I've studied as a doctoral student and put so much time and energy into researching, which is transformational leadership.
Mm-hmm. You know, do you have 17 hours to talk
about
this?
I do. I might be sleeping through some of them, but no.
So giving you a very, very tight as possible answer to this, I know I can ramble sometimes, but as far as transformational change leadership, for me personally, I have to think of if I'm going to lead the ship, I have to be ready for change. And that means even change within myself and realizing that I don't know everything. My ideas aren't the best. And my ideas don't always have to be the one that's used. And so for me, it was an idea of change is hard. Change hurts, but change is 100% necessary. And so I was always keeping that in my mind. I was never satisfied with, we did it and it worked. Just because we did it and it worked doesn't mean we couldn't have done it better. I'm always looking at getting advice. But when it comes to thinking about change leadership and working with a variety of perspectives and ideas, and there were two things that really stick out to me as I'm thinking about this. And the first one is, you will never get everybody on the same page. Don't even try. That is a waste of time to put all of your effort in getting everybody to agree that the move that you're going to make is the right one. As the leader, you've got to stick to something and say, this is what we're going to do. It may not work and we'll change it when it doesn't work, but this is the route we're going to take. And you've got to lead with that strength so that people will be willing to follow that. And the second thing I would say, besides just not everybody's going to be on the same page, is that, you know, I think when it comes to change leadership and when I think about all the transformational change that we did at my campus, as a leader, I had to be as transparent and vulnerable as possible, which is difficult in a leadership role because as the school principal, one thing they never train you on is the amount of things you can't tell anybody else. The amount of daily occurrences in your job that nobody ever knows that you have to deal with. Because A, how do you bring it up in a conversation? And B, often you legally can't. And so I can't tell a teacher who's in my room asking me why I missed an observation that I just got threatened by a parent and there's a police escort waiting for me outside to protect me because they really would follow through with the threat. Like, I can't have those conversations with staff. And so, but on the other hand, I told my staff almost everything that I could. And it was always me, always verbal saying, okay, here's what I'm thinking. Here's where I want to do this. Here's why this is heavy on my heart. Here's why this matters to me personally. It wasn't all numbers and data and all this scientific stuff. I needed them to see me as a leader with heart, somebody who was willing to say, what do you think? Like, I'm willing to listen. Or tell me my idea sucks. Like, I'm totally okay with you telling me that, but tell me how we can make it better. Don't just sit there and go, you suck. Like, say, you suck. Here's something we could try to make it better. And so the more I was vulnerable with them and the more I was transparent in my decision making, the more I saw others feeling like their voices were important enough to share, and others feeling like they were a part of something and not just attached to something because their job title made them attached to it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I think I was interested to hear where you were going to go with your explanation after you said basically that a leader needs to really stick to their guns, because I was going to sort of throw in the caveat of like, okay, but that doesn't mean that every decision that you're passionate about has to come right from you. So I love how you brought in the yes. fact that you're seeking feedback from staff, bouncing ideas off of them, and being vulnerable when things might not go right. Or what I kind of gathered from what you were saying as well, and what I love to try and inspire in others, is it's okay to take risks sometimes. I think often classroom teachers on up to building and district level leaders, they are too afraid because they feel like there's going to be, the repercussions are going to be too severe, yep. I guess. Yep. And sometimes I think they're not going to be that severe. Like, what's the worst that could really happen? And I wonder if sometimes we can just maybe take a step back more often and ask ourselves that. What's the worst that could really happen here if we don't take this risk?
Yeah. Well, you know, I always think too, when I'm making those decisions, the forefront is, you know, one question I always, any meeting I was in where we were making decisions, there was always somebody's job in that meeting, anytime a decision was made, to raise their hand and say, are we doing this because it's what's best for kids or what's easiest for adults? And so just to constantly get us thinking about why are we making these decisions, but like you said, at the same time going, what's the worst that could happen? Am I breaking any laws? Because if not, okay, that's a good step. We can keep moving forward with this idea, you know, and what is the biggest slap on the wrist I could get by doing this? Like, we always ran through that because I'm a big believer in asking for forgiveness instead of permission, as long as I'm not doing anything illegal or harmful to someone else. And so my staff, though, you know, you can tell people to take risks all day long, but until they see A, you taking risks, and B, you celebrating the risk-taking of others even when it didn't work, they're not going to trust you that risk-taking is okay. You can say it till you're blue in the face. They need to see somebody else take a risk and fail and then see what you do. Because if they took a risk down the hall and then they got written up for it, none of us are taking risks. I don't care what that principal says. They don't really want us to take risks. They're just saying that to check a box. And so I think that it's important to, you know, if you're a school leader, just lead by example. Like, what I would say is, as a school leader, what risk have you taken that you shared with your staff while you were taking the risk? Like, how are you getting uncomfortable? An example that I would share is, I was really trying to get my staff one year to try some innovative practices in the classroom. And there was a lot of nervousness around it. There was a lot of that fear of, I don't really understand it, or what do I do if it doesn't work? Like, am I wasting all this time? And so I thought, well, how do we as humans learn best? By seeing someone else doing it or doing it with them. And so I thought, well, as a school principal, I was a teacher before this, but I only taught fourth and fifth grade. But now I'm a principal of a pre-K through fifth grade campus. How am I going to get these pre-K, kindergarten, first grade teachers to trust me when I didn't teach their grade level? Because I don't care what anybody says, every grade level is different. Every grade level has different idiosyncrasies, practices, everything. So I went to every single one of my K1, 2, 3 teachers, and I said, I picked all my English language arts teachers if they were departmentalized. And then I said, I want you to pick the hardest standard or the one that you hate teaching the most. And I want you to tell me a day where I can come in and do a 45-minute lesson over that standard. I want you to stay in the room. I want you to take notes. And then afterwards, I want to meet with you and I want you to tell me everything that I did that you liked and didn't like. Give me feedback because I've never taught this grade. I need to practice. And I will never forget what one of my first grade teachers did. She came up to me after we did it and she goes, this is going to be a really uncomfortable conversation. And I said, why? She goes, because you've got a lot to work on when it comes to first grade kids, and I'm uncomfortable feeling you all, but I'm going to tell you everything. And I said, no, bring it on. She's like, well, you talked too fast. You didn't explain this enough. You went too much over there. And I was like, this is what I need to hear. But it was so empowering for her, because she told me afterwards, you know, to see the school figurehead bring themselves down and forget and not forget that they were a classroom teacher, and not be afraid to get in there in front of their staff and be willing to make a mistake. She goes, it empowered me to know that, dang, I can really, really push this, because he's now coming out. He knows what that kid in my class is like because he taught a lesson with that kid in that class. So he has a better idea when I come to meet with him and say that lesson failed because I couldn't get this kid under control or whatever. And so I think that was one of the most empowering things that I did for my staff, but also for me, because it made me humble myself. It made me really learn my craft even more. And it allowed me that connection with students in a learning environment that I may not have every day as the school principal.
That's such a great story and such good advice, I think, for newer administrators or, like you said, administrators who are sort of out of their element. They're in a different grade level, mm-hmm. or like I experience, you know, I've gotten a lot of school leadership experience, even though I haven't really held administrative positions too much. I have, but not for that long. And it was uncomfortable for me at first, even as an instructional coach, to say, wow, I was really a classroom ELA teacher. I'm certified in music too, right. But that's, you know, I never really actually taught that in the classroom. How am I going to support the math, science, social studies, world language, phys ed? Like, you know, just a lot of sort of foreign concepts to me from a content standpoint. But you know, at the end of the day, I think you would agree too, like, good instruction is good instruction. And once I sort of had that kind of confidence to go in knowing like that I'm strong enough in getting others to recognize what good instruction is, then for me that really helped a lot. But we've talked a lot about, you know, teacher leadership and building leadership. I'm actually wondering, as we start to wrap up here, if you could talk a little bit about student leadership, because one of your most recent books really is about when kids lead, right? And I actually had a really great conversation recently with Principal L, and we talked a little bit too about student leadership, because he used to get his students, or maybe he still does, to play chess, and how the game of chess really taught those kind of leadership skills and stuff. So, you know, without giving too much away in terms of what's in the book, though, you know, when it comes to getting kids to be leaders, not just in school, but later on in life, where does that start, and how do we work with the students in terms of leadership?
You know, when it came to writing When Kids Lead, Adam DeVico, my co-author, and I really wanted to put this book out because we felt like everywhere you turn, there are leadership books for adults. How you want to lead in the business world, education world, whatever. But there's nothing out there for kids or for how adults can empower kids. And through the work that we've been doing, we've been connected with so many incredible kids who are leading the way in different areas of all ages. And I think that's one thing that's my biggest passion about this book is whether you are a elementary teacher, a preschool teacher, a high school teacher, whether you are a parent looking to grow your student, whether you're a coach, like this book hits all of it because we believe that no matter what age kid you're working with, no matter their background, no matter their discipline that they have or may not have, no matter if they're an introvert or an extrovert, we talk about how leadership looks different for everybody. But everybody has leadership qualities in them. And so this book is just all about how you can bring those out in every type of kid and empower them all to really be the best they can be and lead. Because the reality is, student or adult alike, all of us are leaders. Every one of us, when we enter a space, there are eyes watching us, there are ears listening to us. That makes us a leader. And it breaks my heart when people say they're not a leader because they don't get a paycheck or they don't get a title. And being a leader is so much more than that. And so it's just about empowering all kids to lead, and it gives you a ton of tools and how to do that. And my favorite part of the book, though, there are two different parts. The first one is, instead of getting your traditional quotes from people who've read the book ahead of time and endorsements, we went and we chose 10 different kids from around the world to endorse of the great work they're doing. And then we had a college student, but we had a young man who started a nonprofit when he was, I think, 6 years old, and it's still up and running, called Joshua's Heart, and he actually wrote the foreword for our book. And so instead of being just a book about how we can inspire kids' leadership, there are kids throughout the entire book that we put a spotlight on because they're changing the world, whether we choose to see it or not, and every kid is capable.
That's great. You know, I'm not tied to students so much in my current role as an instructional coach, but I really do love highlighting those stories of student leadership, or as you just said, and Principal L, like I mentioned, our conversation talking about just how we can get our students to lead more, or to at the very least recognize their leadership potential and start to tap into that. Now, as we really wrap up, I do want to give you some time here, because one of the reasons I wanted you on too is to plug this event that you have coming up. You know, I know that you're still very involved in terms of being connected and attending and speaking at different events and stuff, but this one seems, correct me if I'm wrong, seems a little bit more near and dear to you personally. And so please tell us all about that and how we can get involved.
You know, I'm involved in a lot of different things, whether it's being an author, whether it's my professional speaking. I also host a conference series called Get Your Lead On, like all these things I'm involved with. And I believe as educators, we shouldn't water down ourselves and just give everything for free. And so, you know, you got to pay for a book, and there's conferences you can go to. But I also believe that I have to give back. I have to find ways to do that. And so this is my second annual, and it's supposed to be annual, but COVID canceled it last year. But it's called Celebrate Your Story. The first one we had in person. It's my very first conference to host. And it was phenomenal 2 years ago when I had round one. This year, because of COVID and having 6-month-old boys, I'm not ready to host a big conference like that in person yet still. So I'm doing it virtually, and it is completely free. It is going to be the entire month of February, and there are over 50 speakers who are involved with this. And what I did was I specifically, you know, reached out through my email list and through connections and said, I believe that everybody has a story. I believe that every story matters. And I believe that when we share our stories, we bring people together and we let people say, me too, and feel less alone, less heartbroken, less feeling like there's no one who understands. We eliminate so much when we tear down those walls. And so 75% of the speakers that are part of Celebrate Your Story this year, this is their first time ever speaking to a public audience like this. So I'm super excited to be amplifying their work, and I've been training them along the way and giving them ideas. But the way the conference will work is every single day, I'm releasing two or three new sessions. And you can choose to watch them that day, but they'll be available all month. And I've got five fantastic keynotes, a brand new keynote to start out every single week. These people are from all over the world. But like I said, it is 100% free because A, February is already a hard enough month as it is. You don't want to be paying for PD. You're just trying to make it through right now. So this is the conference to encourage you, to inspire you, to relight your fire. Yes, there's going to be takeaways. Yes, there's going to be stuff you can use in the classroom, but there's going to be a lot of heart in this. And I know that everything is overwhelming right now. Everything is too much. And so my hope is that this conference can be that spark, that flame, that gets you through at least to March. Because, you know, trying to get further than that right now is unrealistic. So I'm taking it day by day, week by week. But with it being a February conference, there's new sessions every single day.
Well, it sounds exciting. I'm on your list, and so I've been seeing the mentions of it, and to be able to register. Assuming people are listening to this show, but they're not on your mailing list. How do they go ahead and get involved and become registered for that virtual conference?
Yeah, I think the easiest way to tell people that I've been telling people to do it is if you go to my Twitter account. It's my pinned tweet. Or if you go to my Facebook page, which is just facebook.com/ToddNesloney, it's my pinned Facebook post. And so I've left those up there. That's really the easiest way. I'm using Eventbrite as the host. So if you're familiar with Eventbrite, you can also just go there and search for Celebrate Your Story or my name, Todd Nesloney, and you'll find it. And you can just register right there.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to it. I hope some of my listeners, if they're not already registered, will register as well, because it sounds like it's going to be different. It sounds like heading into these tough months, February and March, might be just what we need to get us through. And like you said, at least just get us through.
That's
the month. I'm looking forward to it. I really appreciate your time. I appreciate all the work that you do, and of course organizing this conference as well. Looking forward to that. If people want to reach out to you to find out more, not just about the conference, but from you, where do they go and how do they find you?
So the easiest thing is to go to my website, toddnesloney.com. If you don't know how to spell that, you can just Google Todd Nesloney and how you think it should be spelled, and it will come up. It's the only one there. But my social media is on my website, my books, my blog, my PD resources, all that's there. It's in one great location.
Perfect. I wanted to thank you for your time and being an amazing guest on the show. And just thanks for all the work that you've done, continue to do, and will do in terms of helping out educators, not just the ones that you serve in your area there in Texas, but everywhere. So I really appreciate that.
Hey, thank you. And thank you so much for having me on, Dan.
Well, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you haven't done so yet, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast app. Also, if you enjoy the content shared on the show, please recommend this podcast to other educators, leaders, friends, or anyone you think would love listening and learning. I would also appreciate it if you would leave a positive rating and review on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, or whatever podcast app you use to listen. For more information about me or this show, head over to leaderoflearning.com. While you're there, you can also find the Leader of Learning blog, how to connect on social media such as Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Voxer, sign up for our newsletter, and even find out how to purchase Leader of Learning merchandise. Thanks again, and remember, no matter who you are or where you are, you too can be a leader of learning.